You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
I want to be a producer with a hit show on Broadway.
You're listening to the Producer's Perspective Podcast with your host, Tony Award winner, Ken Davenport.
Hey, here's a tip for you. If you have a show in New York and you're selling tickets at the TKTS booth, then you want to hire the right promotional team surrounding those customers at the booth to give them information about your show. There's a brand new crew in town called, well, the Broadway Crew. They're your sales team out there on the front lines, engaging with your customers face-to-face every single day. Their members are trained to sell and present a cohesive professional image for your brand. That's why they've been able to increase TKTS sales for Broadway and off-Broadway clients by up to 25%. That's a huge amount of money. If you want to increase your revenue at TKTS, give Broadway Crew a call. Check them out at BroadwayCrew.com. That's BroadwayCrew.com. And make sure you let them know that you heard about them through the Producer's Perspective podcast.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I am Ken Davenport. This is the Producer's Perspective podcast, and I'm very excited to have as my guest today the writer that everyone in New York City is talking about, Mr. Joe Iconis. Welcome, Joe.
Hey, thank you.
So unless you've been living under a rock somewhere, the reason everyone's talking about Joe these days is, of course, the musical Be More Chill, which took the internet by storm, then took off-Broadway by storm. This past summer, it's on its way to Broadway in what I'm calling the first musical to be moved by social media. But Joe's been on the scene here for New York for many years. He's a Jonathan Larson Award winner. He's a Kleban Award winner. He's been called the future of the American musical theater, written a bunch of musicals, Black Suits, Things to Ruin, Blood Song of Love, many more. And I've been a fan for a long time, so I'm thrilled that Be More Chill is happening for him. So, Joe.
Yeah.
You're a part of the millennial generation of musical theater writers. So I guess my first question to you as a millennial is, why musicals? Of all the things you could write and all the things you could do, why did you choose musicals?
I just have always had such a deep, insane love of musical theater. As much as I might be branded... A millennial or sort of like contemporary in a musical theater writer, I'm super traditional insofar as the shows that I love and the kind of writer I want to be. I feel like it's like a very sort of old school thing, and so for me, I've the first show that I ever saw was Little Shop of Horrors. I saw the original production of the Orpheum September 27th, 1987, and it just immediately it injected this love of musical theater into my soul in a very crazy way. No one in my family is in theater or the arts in any way, and so I found the arts sort of through musical theater, and to me it's always been just the best way to tell a story. I just love what happens when you combine drama and music and you put it in a room with a whole bunch of people all having the same shared experience, So it just feels like, of course musicals. I wouldn't know how else to tell a story.
How old were you when you saw Little Shop?
I was 6 years old. It was for my sixth birthday. My birthday is September 22nd, and so my dad took me for my sixth birthday, and it was right at the end of the run. Little Shop closed in November of 87, and the movie had already come out, and so I'd seen the movie, and I was obsessed with it, and literally saw a commercial for the stage show, and I was like, oh, that's that movie that I like. This is live on stage. I would like to see that, please. You know, and I had seen, like, you know, Sesame Street Live and, like, that kind of thing. And so, I went as a six-year-old, and it was crazy because I was, like, a very shy kid. You know, I was very shy and, like, really easily scared, and I was, like, a kid who would, you know, cry at just everything, right? And the original production of Little Shop is, like, fairly gritty, and, you know, Little Shop in and of itself, everyone dies, and there's, you know, people get eaten. But I loved it. Like, I didn't find it scary at all. I totally just responded to it. And so, and so that was my first exposure to actual musical theater.
You mentioned some of the other musicals you love. So give us some examples of things that you hold in high regard that inspired you.
Oh my goodness, so many. I love, I'm like a huge Sondheim guy. And so I love Follies a lot. That's probably my favorite Sondheim if I had to choose one. But I also love Assassins, I love Company. I love Into the Woods. I love Cabaret. That's probably my favorite musical of all time. I love Kenner Neb a lot as well. What else? I like Frank Lesser. Like How to Succeed in Business is a biggie for me. That's a great musical. I like Carol Hall a lot. I like Whorehouse is a musical. I like Hedwig. Pump Boys and Dinette, so many. I love musicals.
And when you were six and saw Little Shop, were you a musician yet? Or when did that come into play?
No, that would be so impressive if I was a six-year-old. It's like playing instruments. I started with the love of musical theater. And then separate from that, my family had a piano that was sort of given. It was given to my mom by my grandparents when she was a kid. They just bought a piano. Because they were living on Long Island in the 60s, and it's like you have this house in the suburbs, and so you buy a piano for the house. And so they had this house, and so then when my parents had me, and then, you know, it moved, my grandparents gave us this piano. And because of that, my mom, thought, oh, you should take piano lessons, because she could never play. No one in my family has any musical talent at all. And so they sort of forced me into, you know, piano lessons. And I was doing that and wasn't really, you know, liking it, or wasn't showing any particular skill. And when I was around like eight, maybe nine, the more I started getting into theater and musicals, I started going to see shows and then going home and like plunking out melodies that I had heard at the piano. And so I sort of came to music through theater. And then, by the time I was in like middle school, you know, around like 11 or 12, I was a really amazing pianist as a little kid. And so I was like one of those kids who, you know, could sit down at the piano and just like play for hours and hours and hours. And because my love was theater, I knew all of these old, you know, like show tunes, and I could play all this like Gershwin stuff, but I could play the Gershwin stuff only because of Crazy for You, you know. So like all of my musical knowledge was very much filtered through musical theater, but that's how I kind of came to it, you know. And so when I became old enough to realize or understand that there were people who wrote the musicals, that's what I wanted to do immediately. And so I've said, you know, since I was probably around, you know, 11 or 12, the like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Question was always answered with, I want to be a Broadway composer.
Do you remember the first song you wrote?
Yeah, for sure. The first, so I would write melodies. I never wrote lyrics, really. I would just write melodies, and I would always write melodies to songs that were imagined musical theater moments from movies that I loved, because I was a big movie kid too. So I would write like a ballad for Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but it would just be the music, like never a lyric, sometimes a title. And then the first song that I ever wrote music and lyrics for was a song that was for this community theater production that I was a part of, and it was a review, and they needed a song that was like a TV theme song. And so I wrote this song called The Money Is Yours. And the first time it was performed, somebody in the audience had a heart attack and later died. And so
Some positive feedback for you.
Or like just feedback. Just very extreme feedback. I feel like audience reactions to my work have been extreme ever since. So yeah, that was the first like proper song I wrote. But there's actually a cool video of me when I was in elementary school, and I made up this song called "Mothers Are Special When You're Sad." And the lyrics were exclusively "Mothers Are Special When You're Sad," repeated 16 times because it's a 4-verse song. And I was afraid to sing it myself, and so I had a hand puppet that I hid under a table, and the hand puppet sang it on top of the table. And so I guess that was like my first, but "The Money Is Yours" is first one that killed.
So everyone's path to writing in New York City seems to be very different. Mm-hmm. So how do you go from that to getting started here? Like, mm-hmm. how did you start to make a name for yourself here in the city?
My life in the city was kickstarted through NYU. So I went to NYU undergrad in the music composition department, and when I got towards the end of my undergrad time, I was pretty clueless insofar as like how one would go about infiltrating the musical theater scene, you know. And I was also very different at the time. I was pretty reserved. The idea of like sort of putting myself out there in the way that that you have to put yourself out there was very terrifying to me. And so grad school was like a great way for me at first to be like, oh, I'm gonna like hold off the reality of jumping into my life and like actually try to learn some stuff. And so I went right on to the NYU grad musical theater writing program, and through that I met so many amazing writers like William Finn and Michael John Lacusa and all these people. And that sort of gave me a sort of a more of an understanding of like the business of things and the actual community of theater. And I met people through that program. I met enough people that allowed me to, when I, you know, graduated, to actually have some connections and have some people to go to and talk to you about my work and stuff. But if I didn't go to that program, I don't know what I would have done, you know, because also being in that program, it was such an amazing learning experience, and it sort of taught me how to collaborate and taught me how to be a man living today. You know, I feel like I grew a lot like as a human during grad school. So that was kind of the thing that gave me the tools to be out in the world.
And what was the first musical you wrote?
The first musical I wrote was Black Suits, which was my thesis musical at NYU. And so that was another thing where I graduated with this musical that that people kind of knew even before I graduated, just because of, you know, the sorts of people who travel through the NYU program. At the time when I wrote Black Suits, it was, you know, before Spring Awakening. Spring Awakening was being developed, but Spring Awakening didn't come out until the next, at least a year after I graduated. I graduated in 2005, so I think Spring Awakening was like 2006, 2007. And so at the time, there just wasn't a lot of, you know, rock-based musicals about young people, and there weren't a lot of musicals that had the sound that mine did, and so it was like immediately a very sort of sparkly show for people. And so that was another thing that was pretty wild, to be able to go out into the world with this musical that people kind of knew before they even knew who I was, you know. And it's and like, you know, industry readings that I did of the Black Suits in 2008, I feel like I've yet to have readings where there's been that level of industry person. You know, it was this crazy thing where I feel like people were like coming to see this show just because they had heard about the show, as opposed to like checking out my work. You know, and then that show didn't end up happening in the way that I thought it was going to. And so it ended up being this kind of strange thing where so many people were exposed to me through that show, which then ended up not playing in New York.
Yeah, was that obviously it was disappointing to you. How do you come back from that, of being having a reading attended by someone? I remember news about this.
Yeah, yeah.
And you probably think, oh, here we go. This is how it happens. Man, I go to NYU, it's going to Broadway.
Man, yeah, like yes is the answer. I thought that it was so, everything was so positive. The momentum was so positive. Like from when I was graduating grad school, you know, like I really felt like, oh yeah, Black Suits is going to open off Broadway. It's going to be like this big, you know, sort of like watershed moment. Everyone's going to be like, oh, there hasn't been a musical like this since Hair or Rent or I don't know what. And it's going to go to Broadway. And like, I'm set. I did it. And, you know, it didn't happen, which is fine. But it was definitely confusing and definitely like, oh, this is not it. It, I mean, there's no rules anyway. And so part of it was kind of, you know, I don't want to say liberating, but it was sort of, it wasn't like, oh, I was going after this, you know, this job that I didn't get it. You know, it was just strange, nothing but strange. But I will say that the Black Suits development process was the thing that was the most eye-opening for me, because I really did not fully grasp how long it takes for musicals, even musicals that, you know, everyone was really excited about and felt very like, you know, sparkly and buzzy and all that. It just takes so long for the things to get on a stage. And so, you know, over like my first year out of school, when I was, you know, in development with Black Suits, I realized like, oh, this is the timeline of this thing is going to be a little more protracted than I initially anticipated. And so I immediately felt like, well, I want to do shows, because I've, in addition to, you know, the material I wrote for Black Suits, I was writing these standalone songs that were theater songs, but I knew they were sort of like self-contained theater songs. And I felt like I have so many of these songs, I want to do them. I want to, you know, and I wanted to be in musical theater because I wanted to do musicals. And so like, let's, you know, I have these songs, there's got to be a stage. So let's like do a show. And so I, you know, I very, very soon out of school, I started doing these concerts, which then became the things that sort of introduced my work to a much larger number of people than Black Suits, you know. And so I had this other outlet, you know, on that, and doing these, you know, these concerts and sort of doing these theatrical, you know, endeavors on my own, or, you know, with groups of people that I was, you know, sort of getting behind. That was the thing that kind of allowed me to continue on. It wasn't like I just sort of had this one musical and it had fizzled out and that was that. I had this whole other body of work, which then led to, you know, all of the other stuff that I've done since.
Yeah, it's one of the smartest things, I think, as I've watched your career that you've done and having attended concerts of yours. Mm-hmm. And obviously it markets yourself.
Yeah.
And two, it gives you as a writer just a quick win, because you're right. These musicals, yeah, you could have locked yourself away and spend another 3-4 years writing a musical. Mm-hmm. But this way you get your work out there, you get a positive affirmation, you get applause, you get all that stuff.
Yeah,
that,
yeah,
fuels,
yeah,
your tank to keep going.
Yeah, you know, and for me, I when I first started doing the shows, it was like there wasn't like a huge musical theater concert scene. You know, certainly writers, you know, had done you know, nights of their work, but the ones that I had seen always kind of felt like recitals or something, you know, like, which are great, but I always felt like, oh, I want to do something different. I want something like that could be a live experience. That is not like a sung resume or something, you know, or it's not an audition. It's just, someone can go there and have a fulfilled, you know, theatrical experience. And so I always approach them just saying, I want to just put on a good show and I want it to feel like itself and I want it to be, you know, specific. And I think that's the thing also that sort of allowed me to like keep going with them. And, you know, the whole sort of like Iconison family thing is sort of born out of that, about it being like this event and this performance that is that in and of itself is a fully satisfying, you know, evening. It's not like a taste of something else or a teaser or something. It's its own thing.
Yeah, let's talk about this family a bit, because one of the mm-hmm. things that I love about you and your shows is that you have this group of performers mm-hmm. that you seem, your crew, if you will, that you mm-hmm. seem to take to your concerts, your shows, et cetera. And they're all very unique. Tell me about how you found this group, why they're important to you, mm-hmm. why they keep coming along. And mm-hmm. are they your muse? I mean, what role do they play in your writing process?
Yeah. Kind of all of the above. You know, the initial impulse to do something like this really just came from the sort of art that I've always responded to. And so I've always loved the idea of a rep company. I've always loved the idea of a troupe of, you know, actors, performers, who are all together, and, you know, one night, you know, they do Uncle Vanya, and the next night they do Damn Yankees. And like, I just always loved that sort of idea of like these, you know, like a band of artists who are all each doing different things, and each have different roles, and it changes all the time. My favorite artist, if I had to pick one ever, is Robert Altman, the movie director. And Robert Altman had a similar sort of thing where he used a lot of the same people, actors, but also people behind the scenes, and you know, as an impressionable budding artist, that was always something that I just thought was so cool, and I loved his movies so much, and I understood why there was worth in that, and sort of creating this family of artists. And so when I, you know, first started doing shows, it happened very organically, where it was just like I would see actors and I would see actors that I would love, and I would contact them and ask them if they wanted to do a show, and then I'd ask them if they wanted to do another, and then it sort of became this, you know, band of people. And for me, it was really like, you know, early on when I was doing it, there's always the pressure of like, quote unquote, like recasting for one reason or another. Even in concerts, you know, I do concerts, and like sometimes the venue would be like, hey, can you, you know, throw some again, quote unquote, Broadway people in here, you know? And I would always feel like, why? Like, I just don't, if there was like really a great reason, you know, if it was like, oh, Hugh Jackman or whoever, like the Hugh Jackman of 2008 was, wants to like be in your concert, then I'd be like, okay, maybe, but it's like, it's the silly thing where it's like, there's no real reason for it. And so I just started using, I developed this troupe, you know, and it, what's so funny about it is that now so many people are talking to me about it, and obviously in Be More Chill is populated again, like on stage and behind the scenes, with so many artists who I've worked with for such a long time, you know, some like as long as I've been doing this. Jason Sweet Tooth Williams was, and I met him through the Black Suits, you know, and so like all of these people I've been working with for so many years, and everyone is so positive about it. But for so many years, I constantly had to talk about how, like, you know, I had to combat this idea of like, oh, Joe Iconis only works with his friends. That was everyone's thing. They would say that I was bringing my friends, and everyone would always say that I went to his like college buddies. Like, that was the thing, which was a joke, because like I didn't go to college with any of these people. Like, I literally saw them, you know, like on stages, and it was like, it was always from like an artistic place, and like, yes, I'm friends with so many of these people, but it was a friendship through art, you know. So yeah, it's like it's a cool thing. It's something that I'm very proud of, that it's been able to last as long as it has. And I also love that, like, you know, as much as this family is populated with, you know, sort of off the beaten path actors and people who maybe aren't your typical musical theater performers, you know, I also have people like Annie Golden and you know, Betty Buckley in the last couple of years has done all these shows for me. And that's like my dream, you know, to have this like this just like troupe of misfits that includes like people who are absolute legends, you know, that everybody knows, and people who nobody knows, and like everyone in between. Yeah, you know?
I'm so glad you use that phrase, because that's what I think of, but I frankly mm-hmm. never would have called them that, because they're so extraordinarily talented.
Yeah,
but that's what I saw, and you fall in love with both you and mm-hmm. and your crew again, if you will, because they are so unique. And I remember the first concert I saw, going like, "Wow, I don't know any of these people. Why is that? Because they're amazing."
Yeah.
So tell me just about your writing process, mm-hmm. like. You do write a lot of things. You write music, you mm-hmm. write lyrics, you do write book at times, you've written the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your process from idea first, like mm-hmm. where do you get your ideas, which mm-hmm. are pretty eclectic. Mm-hmm. And then you sit down, and what's that process for writing a show?
It's sort of different for me, dependent on the material or the thing I'm writing. You know, it's like my process for writing a standalone song is different than when I'm writing, you know, a book for a musical, or even a song in a musical. But I tend to, I tend to think a lot before I ever put pen to paper. You know, I obsess over things, right? And so I feel like any musical that I've done, even if it's something that's adapted from source material, it usually intersects with ideas that I've been fixating on for a really long time, you know. And so like something like Be More Chill, you know, when that came to me, it was a book that my agent at the time gave me to read. But I had already, you know, for a while been excited about doing something that was like a sort of naturalistic story that took a huge sort of tonal shift at a certain point, like either a sci-fi or a horror thing. I had been really wanting to like explore some heavy issues in a light way. I had been wanting to write like a proper musical comedy. I had been really obsessed with 70s and 80s horror film scores, you know, so like all of these ideas have been kind of floating around, and then they kind of congealed. And so when I finally settle on something, when it's like all the ideas sort of come together, then I just, you know, I'm a big outliner. And so like when I start a project, I outline fairly explicitly, you know, and I do like, you know, play songs where I think they're going to go. And it's just a lot of like thinking and brainstorming with other people, just with myself. I feel like there's so much that goes into it before I ever actually start to write anything, that by the time I really get in there to write, I tend to write pretty quickly, or it will, you know, it'll sort of come in bursts. Just because I feel like, oh, I've been doing, you know, I've been like, you know, writing this thing in my head for whatever, a month or a year or 6 years, right? So like when it's time to finally write it, it's like I have all of the sort of, you know, the brunt work or whatever kind of done already. And then my actual writing process is pretty messy. I'm not someone who has like a specific time of day that I write. You know, I kind of write whenever inspiration strikes, which usually means I write when there's like a deadline, or I write when whatever is gonna, I write to put out fires, essentially. You know, it's, I feel like I'm overextended enough where there's always gonna be at least three projects where if I don't write this thing, someone's gonna get really angry at me, and that's usually the thing that inspires me to write. But I, when I'm writing a, you know, a song or scene stuff for that matter, I write at, I'll usually start, away from a piano, and I'll usually have like an idea, like a hook or something in my head, usually with music implied. Then I'll go to the piano and write a little bit. Then I'll go away from the piano. I like to write in public a lot. So I like to write at coffee shops or bars or anywhere where there's like, where there's action happening. I tend to not do well in like quiet rooms. I like to have like some distraction going on. It just kind of happens, but messy.
How do you stay objective when you're doing all three elements? Mm-hmm. Do you count on your director to bounce stuff off of, or are you just able to do it yourself? Like, what's that process like?
I'm super collaborative, and I feel like everyone is like, I'm a great collaborator, but I think I actually am, because I've had so many projects where I've written all three myself, or enough where I've written all three myself. When I'm writing, all I want to do is finish so I can get it in a room with other people. Like I realize that I kind of dislike the writing. Like I kind of dislike the like blank page, fill it up with something part of writing. My favorite part of writing is when I can take a script and go into a room with a director who I love, and with actors who I love, and with a stage manager who I love, and any human being who's in the room, it goes beyond hearing feedback. I like truly believe that you know, theater is a collaborative art form, and I think that everyone's voice has a place at the table. And so For me, you know, it's just a matter of getting something on the page. And then once I do, I want to hear from everybody. And when I say everybody, I mean people who I, you know, love and respect and jive with, you know, not like random people on the street or people who I don't think, you know, share a sensibility or whatever. Yeah. It's that. It's trying to like get something down so that I can immediately, as quickly as possible, I want feedback of other artists who I love.
So let's talk about Be More Chill specifically. Mm-hmm. So yeah. This was a commission originally, is that right?
It was a commission, yeah. The idea came from myself and Joe Trace, the book writer. We knew it was something we wanted to do, and we had both been talking to Two River Theater in Jersey about doing something, and they said, why don't we commission you to write this Be More Chill thing you want to write?
So you write it, you put it up there.
Mm-hmm.
When did you know it was something special that was resonating with an audience? Was it that first preview? Was it run through? Was it months later?
It was, I would say, as soon as we got it in front of an audience, even in a reading setting, you know, it felt like, oh, this is a special one for sure. And as soon as we started performances at Two River, it felt like, oh yeah, this is connecting in a real way to the people who are watching it. Which, you know, it's crazy, but it's the way that it felt going into the premiere at Two River was not dissimilar to ways that it has felt on shows of mine in the past. You know, I've had quite a few experiences now where I've had a new musical and there's been a lot of momentum going into it, and a lot of people, you know, say things to me like, oh, this is the one that's going to go from, you know, wherever, you know, we happen to be in Barrington Stage Company or Ars Nova or wherever, and like, you know, go to the fancy theater off Broadway and then go to Broadway because like, look how people are loving this, everyone's loving it. And so, you know, it'd Be More Chill, that was sort of like the, you know, the third or fourth one kind of like that I had had. And so it was exciting, but nothing about it felt like, oh, this is like an extraordinary example of this. It sort of felt like, oh, this, you know, we're doing this again. Everyone likes this thing and it's going really well. And people are crying at that song about the kid in the bathroom. And so it definitely was something that people were responding to. And then, you know, we opened and we got a review that was not a great review, and it just all, it was all over. Like, and it, you know, it was a very palpable, you know, letting the air out of the situation, feeling that again has happened to me pretty much every time I've done a new musical like that. And so the thing that was the most notable about Be More Chill was that it felt like the most disappointing, you know, it's when nothing was going to happen, just because it felt so clearly was connecting with people. And it was just such a bummer because it felt like the group of people was so right on, and there had been, it felt like, you know, there were so many hopes pinned on the show. That it was particularly disappointing when it became clear that nothing was going to happen with it, you know?
But then something did happen.
Thanks, so, internet.
Yeah, so tell me about that and when that happened.
Yeah, man. It only happened because the album was made, and the Two River Theater, bless them, said when, you know, after the show opened and it was clear that nothing was going to happen with it, they said, we really love this show and we are very proud of it and we want to make this album. We want to, you know, have a Two River Theater album and we want to preserve this thing. And so they paid for the album and we did the album on Ghostlight, who, you know, Kurt has been very supportive of me my whole career. All my other albums are on Ghostlight. And we made it really soon after we closed and released it Halloween 2015. And, you know, people liked it, but it was the amount of people who, you know, are going to like a cast album of a show that played for a month in New Jersey. Like, it's that, you know, that core group of theater fans. And so there was nothing, you know, again, extraordinary about people's responses to it initially. And there were the sort of responses that I was really used to getting, like, you know, people clearly connecting with the work, but a finite number of people. And so when it, you know, when it became clear that something else was going on was like spring of 2017.
2 years later.
2 years later. Yeah. Yeah. And it just started in the form of getting notifications from Twitter and Instagram and to a lesser extent Facebook of people you know, responding to the album, and in particular Michael in the Bathroom. And at first it sort of felt like, oh cool, people are like for some reason discovering the songs in Be More Chill. And you know, I have a healthy culty fan base, or up till then I had had one, and so it wasn't unusual that I was, you know, getting like a tweet from someone I didn't know, you know, about a song that I wrote. But then it just sort of, you know, started increasing in frequency, and then it was like you know, fan art, which was something that was kind of new to me and my work, and then like more and more fan art, and then it was enough where it felt like something strange is happening. And so when it, you know, the first few weeks of all of this going down, I, you know, contacted George Salazar, who's a good friend of mine, and you know, we've been working together before Be More Chill and since Be More Chill. And I was like, are you doing something with Michael in the Bathroom? Is something going on? And he was like, no, I've been noticing all this stuff. I thought you were doing something. And then, you know, I spoke to Joe Trace, the book writer, and I was like, are you, like, you know, is something going on with the show that I don't know about? And he was like, no, I was going to ask you the same thing. And so it was sort of all of us literally, like, not understanding why people were all of a sudden, you know, catching on to the show. And then it became really apparent that it was something that was more than just a few people discovering it. It felt like, oh, this is like a thing that's happening. And it's like a, you know, it's like just such a silly word to say, but it's like a viral thing, you know, and it was like really, it was really happening. And so then, you know, I involved Ghostlight, and at first Ghostlight was just sort of like, what? Like, you know, it's like, good, you know, some people are tweeting about it, good for you. And then, you know, of course, like people started buying the album, which is something that just, they, you know, people just don't do. People don't buy albums, and people certainly don't buy musical theater albums. And so then, you know, Ghostlight was like, wait a minute, what's going on with Be More Chill? What is this? It's like, I don't know. No one knows, man. And so then, you know, Ghostlight made this Michael in the Bathroom music video when all of this was first starting, and that music video started taking off. And then over the course of last summer, just the numbers associated with everything to do with the show just started growing and growing and growing. Really, really extraordinary numbers for an album of a show that had never played New York City, and that had played New Jersey 2+ years ago. Yeah, and so it just kind of built from there. It's pretty wild.
And all of a sudden something is happening. It goes off Broadway. It sells out in like an instant.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you'll open on Broadway in the spring.
Yeah.
So how does that make you feel, says the podcast host/therapist? Like, what are you excited? Are you like, oh, here we go again? Like, it's, what?
No, I am so excited. And like truly in disbelief. You know, I have wanted to have a show that I care about on Broadway as long as I've been in the world of musical theater, and longer. You know, that has been my dream. When someone's like, what's your dream? The politically correct answer is always like, I want my work to be seen by as many people as humanly possible, which is the truth. 100%. But like my dream is to have a show on Broadway, because I love the idea of Broadway. I think it's so cool. I love that huge shows can exist next to little shows. And I think there's real worth in it. And I've always loved the idea of having a show that I cared about, you know, and I always thought like, I would certainly not, you know, if I made it to Broadway as a writer of a show that I felt weird about, or, you know, some like maybe less than ideal situation for what my ideals are, I wouldn't like kick that out of bed, but the fantasy version was always going to Broadway with a show that I really cared about, that I thought was really good, and that was representative of me as an artist and a human being. And like the triple fantasy version of that was getting to do it with artists who I loved and respected and who I really believed in and had a relationship with. And the fact that that's happening is really unbelievable. And the fact that it has happened the way it has happened is just something. I mean, I could never have I could never have imagined it because it didn't exist, you know. So it's so bizarre, and it really has given me a lot of faith, you know. I had so many disappointments, not artistic disappointments. I've been really lucky to have great artistic experiences in my life, and I'm very lucky, and I've had a lot of opportunities, but I really have experienced, you know, these huge sort of crushing disappointments so many times. And I really believe there was a certain way that you had to get to where I wanted to get to with the sort of stuff that I was writing. You know, I've always felt like I'm writing these musicals, whether they're based on properties or not, that are a little bit left of center and need certain things in order to get to Broadway. And, Be More Chill is a musical that, you know, it's not based on a big movie, and there was no famous person in it, and it wasn't written by famous people, and there wasn't there wasn't a titan, producer who was shepherding along the way from the beginning. And so I felt like, it didn't check a lot of boxes that needed to be checked to get to Broadway. And the fact that we were able to get there it just makes me feel like, oh, wow, there actually is another way of doing things. Like, there just is. And even if we don't make it for very long on Broadway, we got there. And the fact that we got there, I truly think is worth a damn.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's really extraordinary. And I just love the fact about that you're getting there the way you want to get there, as opposed to, frankly, writing the score to Who Framed Roger Rabbit or
totally.
Mannequin the Musical or
totally.
Whatever someone would hire you
Mannequin
to do.
The Musical.
I know.
I would choose Mannequin 2 if I had to musicalize one of the movies in the Mannequin franchise.
Would.
But yeah. I'm just so edgy in that way.
So what happens now with the show? Is you're mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, great. We did it. We did it off Broadway. I'm just going to hang out until it goes to Broadway. Or are you rolling up your sleeves? Are you doing more work? What happens?
I mean, my sleeves are literally rolled up right now.
They are. I
yeah.
see that.
No, I mean, definitely doing more work. Like, I've worked very, very hard to get to this place. And the work continues. And I do not want to feel like I let this moment in my career slip by without doing as much as humanly possible from an artistic place and from a professional place. And so we're definitely going to be doing some work on the show from off Broadway to Broadway, not changing it in a way that's like Broadwayifying it, which is so funny. Like, so many people have asked me, what is the Broadway version of this moment or this moment? And it's like, it's the off-Broadway version, but in a different theater. You know, it's like, at the end, it's the off-Broadway version with more dynamic pricing. Like, it's the same thing, idea.
You have that interesting, you know, look, social media has been such the reason why things mm-hmm. have propelled like it has. Well, if you were to quote-unquote Broadway-ize it, you could have the reverse effect, right? You could have all these fans.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine if the fans revolted? If the Be More Chill fans revolted, like, that would just be... I think Broadway would just be gone. Like, they would just be running rampant, like lunatics, through Times Square because we had, ruined this sacred, ramshackle musical. But also, like, that's what's been so funny and specific about the whole fan base thing is that as much as the fan base got the show, people who need to get interested in a show interested, so that it ended up on a stage, it was a lot of pressure, and it was something that I've never experienced as a writer when revisiting something, any sort of rewriting. And we did quite a bit of rewriting on Be More Chill for the signature. Anything that I did, I had, this voice in the back of my head or the front of my head saying like, oh, millions of kids are going to be so pissed off that you just changed that word. That, it's like there are fans who know every single syllable of that cast album. And I was very aware that anytime I changed something, it was going to be notable. And I believed that, you know, the people who responded to Be More Chill in the first place responded to, you know, my voice and Joe Trace's voice. And those voices, I think, are the same as they were in 2015. But, you know, I'd like to think that we're better writers than we were in 2015. And so I believed that they would, you know, go with us no matter what we did. But it was like, it was scary. And there was, you know, there's this one song that I never thought that we got right. It's Two River. And it was one of those moments where, you know, you're developing a new musical. And I feel like at a certain point, you just have to put the pause button on. You don't crack it. It's just like, well, this is what it is. And we run out of time. And so this is what it is for now. There was this one song that I always was like, we never got that right. And it always made me cringe at Two River. And I always felt like, oh, if I'm given the opportunity, to do something else with Be More Chill, that's like one of the no-brainer thing. I'm gonna like do some work in this song. Clearly needs work. And we had this box office opening event for Be More Chill before we went into rehearsals and anything. And a lot of fans came, and so I got to interact with people and fans of the show. And so the song in question is the song called "The Pitiful Children." And this woman came up to me, and she was like so excited about the show and like so passionate and telling me how much the show means to her. And she took me by the shoulders and she looked in my eyes and she said, just promise me one thing. Promise me you're not going to touch the pitiful children.
Literally
said it.
What did you say?
And I stammered, and I guess I lied to her. And I was like, or I gave some politician answer where I was like, we're going to try with the best of our abilities to maintain the integrity of the Be More Chill that you know and love, while also making it the best theatrical experience it can be. But it was so heart-stopping, and I've literally thought about her all the time. And I am so, terrified for her to see the show. Maybe she's seen it. I don't know. Maybe there's hate mail waiting for me at the signature. But but it's that kind of thing. And I just every moment I rewrote, I was like, oh man, are the people who built this thing up gonna then just revolt against it and tear it down because of my poor rhyme or something?
But having watched a bunch of those fans, literally I've seen them in merch, walking up 8th Avenue coming from the show. I think they're fine.
Yeah, no, they've been very kind.
So, look, we were talking before we hit record here about how you're suddenly this overnight sensation. Everybody's mm-hmm. talking about you, but you've been, banging on doors for a long time and doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your advice to other writers out there who are just starting, just getting out of college, that would love for one song, never mind a whole musical, to go as viral as yours did? What would you tell them to do?
I would tell them to... all of my advice has become very cheesy these days, but believe that you can do it. I am someone who would not have thought that what happened to my show was possible, and I 100% did not try to make that happen. I just tried to make the best show I possibly could. And so that's definitely something I would say to anyone. Just try to make good work. Don't try to think about how you can make this thing that you're working on, go viral, or how you can make it do whatever. Just focus on good work. And I think if it connects with people, it's going to connect with people, but it has nothing to do with the making of it. It's I think all you can do is try to be honest and truthful, and just believe and just keep going, because it's not, and all I know is my own experience, but it's where I am right now is not where I thought I would be, certainly a year ago. And it's just, it's amazing. I think that there's the world is changing, and there's new ways of doing things, and there will only ever be new ways of doing things. So just, believe that.
So my last question, which is my genie question, mm-hmm. I want you to imagine the genie from Aladdin comes to visit you.
Nice.
And wants to congratulate you mm-hmm. on believing yep. in the genie and in all other things
yep.
By granting you one wish. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, things are going very well for you right now, but mm-hmm. I want you to imagine that you're, what upsets you the most about Broadway? What gets you frustrated? What has you banging your head against the wall that you would ask this genie to wish away?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. About Broadway specifically.
It can be about theater in general. Well, you like to draw outside the lines. We'll let you do the same with the question if it so inspires you.
Oh man, this is so hard.
A new rule, you can't say ticket prices.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I wouldn't say ticket prices. I don't know. I want to say a good thing. I think that if I could ask a genie to wish away one thing about the current state of theater, the closed-mindedness. I just think that everything is better if people have an open mind to new ways of doing things, which is a messy, potentially confusing thing to say to a genie, but I believe it. You know, I know like the successes that I've had are because people have taken a chance on me, because people have taken a chance on the folks that I've, you know, surrounded myself with, the Jennifer Ashley Teppers of the world, and people who are visionaries, and just make space for the visionaries. Oh man, the genie would be like, so what's your wish?
No, it's a good one. And a shout out to Jennifer for sure, who used to work for me as well. I just love it. She's been talking about you for a long time. So you're right. Everyone out there has to make room for people like you, even before their shows go viral. Yeah. So I think it's a wonderful wish, Joe.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
And frankly, it's educational for me too. I got to try to do the same thing here, what I said. So thanks for that. Thanks for joining me. Thanks to all of you for listening. And go see Be More Chill when it opens. It's one of the most exciting things to happen to Broadway in a long time. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.